Well, the third round of the season has come to a thrilling conclusion. It's been an exciting week of rugby league with thrills and spills and just a little bit of drama to go along with it. AJ and Reese dissect the third round, including that horror high shot from Newcastle forward Mitch Barnett. This is the league scene's look at the third round of the NRL season. Welcome everyone to the league scene's look at the third round of the NRL Telstra Premiership. I'm AJ Luke Antonio, contributor of the League Unlimited magazine and the Front Row program. Joining us as always is another the league contributor, Reese Sullivan. Reese, nice to have you back.
Oh, nice to be back, AJ. This is, I think this is a record for most consecutive weeks I've done a podcast, so we're doing well.
We've been doing very well. So what we're going to do today is we're going to recap the third round of the season. We're going to go over some news because it's been a massive week in terms of judiciary news. Mitch Barnett will be fronting the judiciary tonight. Of course, we're going to have a lot of Mitch Barnett talk in the middle of the program when we're dissecting that game, so you don't want to miss that. We're also going to be recapping the Graeme Annesley briefing. He had a lot to say about a few different incidences from last week, as well as we're going to recap the teams because we're doing this on a Tuesday. We're going to recap the team list as well. So, Reese, without further ado, let's get into it, my friend.
Oh, can't wait.
So, Thursday night...
There's a lot to talk about this week.
There is a lot to talk about. Thursday night saw Cronulla 36 down, St. George Illawarra 12. And I think it's safe to say Craig Fitzgibbon's build of what he wants this team to be about is finally starting to come together.
Yeah, it is. And it works really well for the Sharks because he plays them in a style that's very similar to how the team is built to play. It's not a situation where he wants to play the team one direction and it's built for another. He specifically recruited guys like Nico Hines to help fill his vision. Mm-hmm. And you look at the way Hines has been playing this year, I believe he's so far leading the Dally M leaderboard through three games. So
I think Isaiah, yo, he's definitely leading the League Unlimited leaderboard.
Yep.
He's on 8 points in our one, which is very skilled. But I think Isaiah Yeo's leading overall.
Okay, that's fair. Yeo and Hines have both been very good this season. But the way Hines has been playing, honestly, I thought what he did last year at the Storm, it would take him a little bit to replicate that.
Get back in the system.
Yeah, he's gone up a gear this season, which is very impressive to see.
He's done very, very well. And I think one thing in particular, how well they played in the conditions.
Yeah, that's another thing.
It was so bad there at Wollongong on Thursday night.
It was, but they were able to counteract that. They didn't play that attacking style we've seen through their first two games.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, they bunkered down, played more one-out footy, and let the halves and Will Kennedy as well just play off the back of that on the goal line.
100%.
It worked to perfection.
Dragons, meanwhile, lost Jaden Sewer to yet another high tackle. A lot of comment was made about this particular incident. Do you think it's justified?
Yeah. Look, at the end of the day, you know, you're always going to get the people complaining about mitigating factors and, oh, where's he supposed to go?
You're stealing the words out of Brave's mouth.
At the end of the day, he jumped into the tackle.
Yeah.
Even though the Sharks player was dropping into it, he jumped into it as well. That is grounds for dangerous contact.
Do you think they got the grading right, though, grade two?
Well, I mean,
in relation to the other incidences that we've seen over the weekend, which we'll get to in a minute.
If we're going
to
talk about the other instances, then no.
Okay. But
if we're isolating each case, looking at it on its merit, I think a grade two is pretty fair. I think if he didn't jump into the tackle, it would have been a grade one.
Mm-hmm.
But because his motion into the tackle was dangerous, it has to be a grade two.
You could make the argument too, Jesse Ramien jumping into the tackle for his high shot when he's trying to jam in and making the contact. He only got, I believe, a grade one as well.
Yeah, you could do that as well. And I think that's where...
He's walking with a $1,000 fine.
Yeah, and I think that's where the MRC needs to become more consistent. It's just grading in each case.
To answer your question from before, Nico Hines is actually tied for third in the Dally M's.
Oh, who's ahead of him?
Yo's leading, and then they got as Hux refers it, Freudenhausen.
Yeah, Freudenhausen. Yeah, he's such a massive fraud, you know, that he picked up 3 points in the losing team this week.
Let me have a look who the judge was, and Matt might explain it. Oh, the pillow, David Shillington.
That makes sense.
He gave 3 to a losing side in round 1, too. He gave 3 to Curran.
Oh, my. Okay, no. Come on. Come on, Dave. I liked you when you were playing for Queensland, but come on.
The worst part is Roy Masters gave 1 point to Ben Hunt in the Thursday night game. Can't hide this to George Byers, Roy.
Ben Hunt wasn't even the best Dragons half on Thursday night.
A bit of concussion controversy with Connor Tracy. In relation to everything we've seen, we've got more rants coming about the independent doctor. Why was he allowed to stay on the field?
Mate, I have no idea.
Come on.
Mate, I have no idea.
We're both sitting there watching the game and we text each other back and forth and we both came up with the same argument nearly at the exact same time.
Yeah. It just didn't make sense that he was able to continue when there were other cases this week of players who weren't even hit on the head, or technically they were hit on a head, but not the head you're supposed to get hit on. And they still had to go off for a head injury assessment. So.
Graham Annesley did explain that. We'll get to that later in a minute. But Friday night saw the season second take ball. This one was between the West Tigers and the New Zealand Warriors. The Warriors ended up winning this one, so it saves Nathan Brown from getting sacked for another week. Meanwhile, for the West Tigers, the pressure is well and truly on. Reese, I was covering this game for League Unlimited and nearly lost my sanity, hence why it gets the prestigious honour of a tank bowl. How did you see this one, my friend?
Well, look, I know there's no draft in rugby league, so tank bowls are basically worthless because you're not actually tanking for anything.
Yep.
But it definitely felt like neither team wanted to win in the second half.
Oh, mate, that was true. It was. I'll read to you a paragraph, the start of the paragraph that I did for League Unlimited, because it was a glorious beginning to the paragraph. If I can just find it here on the Monday Expert, because it was diabolical the way that I wrote this paragraph.
Honestly, that last
the second
minutes?
Half. Yeah, the second ahead, half can only be described as diabolical. It has to be said. Errors by both sides during key attacking raids blunted chances to assert their dominance.
Yeah. Let's talk about for a second. You know, the Tigers, one point, their attack was just, they would get a chance in the 20 and they would run 4 hit ups. And then try to throw the ball around and it wouldn't work and then just kick.
Do you know the worst part? It was when they were down to 12 men.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. When they were down to 12. Because all game, Stanford Toa had been the most dangerous attacking player on the Tigers. You should be able to agree with me on that one.
He and Gildart, that left edge looked very promising.
The left edge was deadly. But 3 times they had the ball 10 meters out of the Warriors line. And all 3 times they tried to base their attacking play down the right-hand side of North Luma. And I don't even know who was at center. I don't even want to know who was at center on that side.
Garner.
Yeah, that just makes it even worse.
It was dreadful. I mean, my notes just have literal dreadfulness. The only good thing about it was I thought Jock Madden really... He tried his best. He had the 2 try assists. I gave him the 1 point.
He did. He was a bright spark. Obviously, Madden, you know, we don't really know if he is a first-grade quality player.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is because Michael Maguire has been prone to leaving him in reserve grade for extended periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the way he played, he was a genuine threat for the Tigers, which they needed. The problem was, he was having his handbrake pulled a little bit by Luke Brooks. at times.
One of the toy, there is a bit of controversy about this game. Obviously, Luciano Leilua dives over for a try. Referee makes a live decision, very bold, and says he knocked it on. I mean, personally, I do not have a problem with a referee making a live decision. I want to see more of it, but when it's that close in a try-scoring situation, I'd rather the referee be safe and send it upstairs.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's what the bunk is for, and that's why they stopped having the referee, if the referee rules try, unless it's a penalty try situation like we saw on Sunday afternoon, they have to go, they just call the try, and then the bunker can look at it, because it cuts down on the amount of quote-unquote bunker referrals.
The only question mark that came out of it was because we went from a 20-meter, do you reckon the bunker could have buzzed in?
I mean, they have in the past. They love to buzz in to change 20 meters to dropouts.
Like, that's my point. Like, there was such a delay from, to go to the 20. Do you think that they could have potentially buzzed in and sent it up?
They should be able to. I don't see why they shouldn't be able to in that situation. To alert the referee, like they do when a try has been scored, and they alert the referee saying, hey, we might have something here. We want to take closer look.
Yeah, okay.
They can alert it in the other way.
I just wanted to get your thoughts on it. There is a bit of a blow for the Tigers. Stefano Itukamanu is out indefinitely with an ankle injury. They've got Zane Musgrove in at prop for their upcoming game against the Titans. So that's a bit of a blow. He was one of the players that, when you're watching them play, ooh, he could be something. I mean, I had him as a potential origin bolter at the beginning of the season.
He's been playing well, but with the Tigers going the way they're going, I don't think he's going to be able to make the origin side, unfortunately.
No, I agree there. Jake Simkin was charged with a grade one crusher tackle. He'll just accept a $1,500 fine.
Again, because Michael Maguire has sent him down to reserve grade once again. Poor bloke. Like, I don't know if he's actually played consecutive NRL games without there being an injury before.
I don't know. He's in the reserves. And I've also got Stafford Torre in the reserves, which is an interesting one.
Yep. Tigers fans absolutely massively blowing up about it. And I think I will bring this tweet up.
Has Will Toshak had a go at it yet?
Yes, he did. And I know we love to bag Hucks on here.
Yeah.
But I will say he hit the nail on the head with this tweet, all right?
Read it out. We're going to give him full credit as always.
So obviously everything West Tigers put out a tweet saying, to anyone saying Madge isn't the issue or at least part of it, take a look at this absolute clan bringing back a busted Roberts returning from injury over Stanford Toa, who made 14 tackle busts last week and was one of our best on the night. Hucks then co-tweeted saying, but the roster is terrible. You can't blame Madge, says the delusional NRL watcher who either doesn't know or doesn't care that Madge picks the team and has either signed or re-signed every single Tigers player currently in their top 30.
That is a very... He hits the nail on the head.
He does, 100%.
You want to know what that kind of reminds me of? The Tigers doing that. Mike Maguire is like Will Smith, and to the fan base, which is Chris Rock. It is the same week in, week out.
What do the face say to the fist?
Okay, enough talking about this tank ball. Okay, do we have to talk about this one? Friday night, Rabbits 28 defeated Roosters 16. South Sydney just dominated the Roosters. There we go. I said it. The Roosters were lucky to...
Big bold statement there, AJ. Big bold statement.
That's what we're about here. I thought the Roosters were lucky to only go in 12-6 at halftime, just with the amount of ball South Sydney had, and they were just peppering. And I thought when Joey Manu scored and did the old spike on Latrell's head...
It would be a momentum shift.
It would be a momentum shift, but it wasn't. As usual, with the Roosters, we concede a stupid tackle one penalty. We don't wrap up the football. We rush up in defence. And lo and behold, Cody Walker scores and changes the game. Why we have two of our biggest defensive liabilities on the same edge is beyond me.
Especially against a side like the Rabbitohs, who love to play down the edges.
Exactly. Like, what? I mean, Angus Crichton, no disrespect to the bloke, but I reckon he's so far out of form right now, he'll be lucky to get a look in State of Origin time. He's playing on the bench as a middle-style Isaac Liu role. So Tili Tupanua's got to be looked at as a potential see-you-later. because from all reports, Renofa Tony, Nafahahu White, Tuku Hautiapa are absolutely killing it in reserve grade.
Would you say they're training the house down?
I'm going to say they're training the house down. Daniel Saluka-Fifita is going to get rewarded with a chance on the bench. Hopefully, he gets through 80 minutes without doing a dog shot.
Yeah, I was going to say, I do like the way Daniel Fifita plays, and I still call him Daniel Fifita because I can't pronounce the other name.
Yeah.
But he just makes way too many brain snaps. So if he's cut that out of his game, I think he could be a difference maker in the Roosters side this year compared to how they've played in the first three rounds.
Watching his trial form, he was absolutely outstanding.
Yeah.
He and Terrell May and Tuku were absolutely good, and so was Nafu. And I do have a conflict of interest because I absolutely love Nafu White.
Yep, obvious reasons.
18th jersey hanging up in my room. Awesome. Okay, but again, Latrell Mitchell still isn't getting involved enough for me. And I get all... But you look at the way Teddy gets his hands on the footy heads. And I know he overplayed his role on Friday night. It's probably the worst game I've seen him play since arriving at Bondi. But still, you look at the guys like Turbo, Edwards, Pappenhausen, even Guffo, how they get their hands on the ball 20 to 30 times a game. Latrell doesn't do that.
Yeah.
Enough.
You're right. And I noticed that as well when there'd be a kick towards the middle of the field.
He was playing out on the wing with 5 minutes to go.
Yep. But even then, there'd be a kick in the middle of the field when Latrell was at fullback, and he'd let it bounce to have Paulo or Johnson pick it up. You know, the elite fullbacks of the game attack those balls and bring it back into the line. That's one of the bases of their games. You know, imagine the outcry if Pappenhausen let a ball bounce into the arms of, you know, Robert Jennings. I know he's out for the season, but Robert Jennings.
It'd be pretty bad. It'd be poor. Pappenhausen scared of contact.
Adam Hucks would be having an absolute field day. He'd be banging out 5 tweets in the next minute if that happened. So, you know, see it happening with Latrell is disappointing because, you know, last season he was starting to get into that of bringing the ball out. And that's one of the big things, the big differences from playing center and playing fullback is the kick returns.
Mm-hmm.
And last season, he was getting into the rhythm of doing that consistently. But now it seems like he's taking a step back. So hopefully, as the season goes on, he does get back into the rhythm because Souths are a better team when Latrell is damaging from the back. But until then, yeah, I have to agree with you. He needs to just be getting more touches of the ball, needs to be more involved in the attack.
Okay. Saturday saw us take a trip out to Carrington Park, Bathurst, and for 38 minutes, it was a competitive ball game. Then it's time for this week's... We're going to break from tradition because we are going to go off in the next 5 minutes for our lolcow of the week.
Your lolcow of the week. I still have one because I'm too disgusted by this act, Joe Buck, thank you. to even... Yeah, AJ just got it. AJ just got it.
That is the perfect timing.
I'm not even going to put that as my lolcow because it was just a coward act. But anyway, AJ has it as his lolcow, so...
So, and some of them, I'm going to just say this now. Paul Kent, your commentary on this has been absolutely bullshit. Yep. I braved myself enough to listen to 30 seconds of NRL 360 and immediately wished I was doing something different for that 30 seconds. But away from that, Chris Smith, everyone's probably seen the incident by now. He runs through the lead decoy. Mitch Barnett raises his elbow, makes direct contact to the head. It was missed by everyone live, I'd say.
Yeah.
And then I hear the referee, Peter Goff, who somehow has been dropped this week for reasons unknown, tip off to the Penrith player, the bunker's having a look at something in back play. And I saw Chris Smith on the ground and was thinking, well, what's going on here? And then I see the replay for the first time. I hear Woz and Co. blowing up in the commentary. And I watch the incident for myself and I'm like, he's got to go. And to my credit, I made the bold prediction live that he'd be referred straight to the judiciary.
Yeah, well, there's actually, from my perspective, AJ and I at the time we were both bagging Charlie Staines. So I was sitting there on Snapchat with my phone in hand, trying to figure out a play on the Forbes Ferrari nickname to make it a worse car. To make it a worse car. And I'm sitting there trying to do that. And I look up and there's Mitch Barnett running with his elbow out into Chris Smith's jaw. And I immediately just break away and go to AJ while the replays were being done. He has to be sent off for that. That is a send-off offense.
100% is. And they made the right call. Peter Goff sent him off from the field. He's been referred to the judiciary. And as we were touching on, he will be suspended. What realm of possibility are we thinking here?
Well, if the NRL has any gall about them, we won't be seeing him again until at minimum May. I think that's the minimum there, 4 weeks. Realistically, I think he should get 7 minimum.
Well, the longest suspensions in the modern era, of course, Danny Williams has 18 weeks. Nothing's going to top that king hit on Mark O'Neill.
Yeah.
John Hopewadi for the flying elbow, he got 17. Clint Newton got 12 weeks.
Yep.
For an elbow. Tim Madison in 2002 got 10 weeks for karate chopping Justin Holbrook in the head.
Yep. I mean, the one that I've seen it referred like with the most is Matt Pryor's tackle on Jonathan Thurston in 2012. But the difference is between those two instances, the big difference is Thurston had the ball.
Yeah.
And Smith was the decoy, clearly not getting the ball.
And what suspension did Pryor get? 5 weeks?
5 weeks, yeah.
Okay, so that's the precedent at the moment that we're using. And this will be a new test for the new judiciary code as well to see how incidences are referred are dealt with.
Yeah, it should be fun.
It will be an interesting one. But we've actually got to talk about some footy after that. what did you make of the game?
It was actually a decent game after that.
What were your thoughts on Penrith? Do you think they kind of coasted a little bit down to 12 then when Newcastle went down?
They definitely coasted. It felt like they just sort of fell into a routine in the start of the second half where it was just hit up, hit up, kick constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of let the Knights back into the game a little bit. Like, I think Penrith were always in control, but the Knights were still hanging around when they could have been easily put away. So Ivan Cleary did say that in his post-game comments that he thought Penrith were a bit too relaxed. I think it's something they have to work on, because if it keeps up like that and you can't put your chances away against a big team like a Melbourne or a Souths or a Chooks or even an Eels side.
Yep.
As we saw this week.
Yep.
Yeah, you're not going to be in a good position to win those games.
100%. 150%. But more so, Penrith have a new look left edge, and I think Isaac Tago is finally settling in.
Oh, he had a phenomenal game, Tago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, Kalen May was the one with all the plaudits for his hat-trick. Obviously, Stephen Crichton was given a lot of praise for his play on the other side of the field. But Tago looked at home playing centre there.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he looked really solid. He didn't make mistakes. Obviously, walked away with a double, which is always nice for a player. And yeah, I think he did really, really well.
100%. Viliami Kikau defensively looks to have regressed a little bit.
Yeah, he's always been that sort of defender who was a big hit magnet. He would always come out, try to put a shot on that would swing momentum of the game.
Yep.
And that did impact his ball-to-ball defensive capabilities overall. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember a hit he's put on this year. Like, a meaningful hit for Penrith.
Yeah, 100%.
And that's an issue because, you know, if he's not rushing out making big hits, but he's still not being able to be consistent consistently playing that middle third, making 20, 30 effective tackles a game.
Yep.
Then what is he going to be able to do defensively? What's his defensive ceiling?
And look at the money Canterbury's throwing at them.
Yeah, I'm sure.
For next year.
I'm sure there's a couple nervous faces on the Bulldogs, especially considering their marquee signing, depending on which way you look at it, their marquee signing for this season hasn't scored a try yet.
Yeah. But it's been good, though, to be fair. But we'll talk about Canterbury in just a moment. Saturday's other game saw Parramatta 28 defeat Melbourne 24. It was the game of the year, bar none, so far this season. And sadly, the match winner is out injured because of it. Ray Stone tore his ACL in shattering fashion, scoring that match-winning try. Reese,
I'll tell you what, I've never seen that before. Like, we all remember the Kevin Locke one back in, like, what was it, 2011, 2012?
2010 against the Roosters when he smashed the goalpost?
2010, yeah, when he slammed to the goalpost.
Tau Moga did it in 2018 for the Knights.
Yep.
I remember he steps back in and he tore his ACL.
But I've never seen a player tear their ACL scoring a try, let alone scoring the game-winning try.
Yeah, I saw, I remember vividly Tau Moga because I've watched Tau Moga go through the grades and seeing knee injury after knee injury. I always felt for the bloke.
Yeah, it was tough with Moga. But the crazy thing is, that's going to be Ray Stone's final act in the Parramatta jersey.
Yeah, he's off to the Dolphins next year. He's off to
the Dolphins next season. So his final act in the Parra jersey is tearing his ACL, scoring the game-winning try in what's the first double of his NRL career.
Let's just talk about the frantic final 10 minutes because Ray Stone scores. Wonga Blake is peppered by bombs. I don't think he took a single bomb in the second half.
Yep, and then you also had the miscommunication with the Eels when Moses wanted to kick the field goal and they went on attack down Brown's side.
Oh, and that's what led to the try.
Yep, and then immediately off that, Pappenhausen scored up the other end to tie
Brandon
the game.
Smith with a good hit, with a good line break, passing inside to Pappy.
He looked solid. He wasn't perfect, but considering he was brought in at the 11th hour because both of the Storm's other hookers contracted COVID.
Yep.
He did okay.
He did very, very well. One other thing I wanted to touch on with Newcastle before that I didn't get to. I spoke to Edric Lee out at Penrith on Sunday. He's looking pretty solid coming back from that ankle injury. Newcastle fans, he's probably a little bit behind the pecking order, but good to see him come back after the ankle injuries of the past few years.
Yeah, we want to see Edric Lee back in the NRL. He's always been one of those wingers where you just watch and you just have a smile on your face every time he touches the footy.
100%. But for Parramatta, moving forward, they just keep finding a way. They reminded me a little bit of the Roosters last year. Keep finding a way forward through adversity.
Yeah. You're 100% right. And obviously, there's still a lot of talk with the Eels and the contracts around the club. You know, there's still a bunch of players that haven't committed their future beyond this season.
Yep.
But they're not playing like that. They're not playing like a team that's all going off in their separate directions. Obviously, they've had, two players already signed, excluding Stone. You know, mm-hmm. Two key players that have already signed with other clubs.
At Oregon, Kafusi's off to Cronulla next year.
Yep. And they're still playing for each other. They're still working hard to get the results on the field. And I'm sure the person who'd be most happy with that is Brad Arthur. So,
yep. So next year they've got Ryan Madison, Tom Opacic, Hayes Perrin, Mitch Rain. They're the main ones off contract. And they've also lost Maradona Cora. He was the other one that's kind of flown under the radar, but it's gone.
Yeah, that's true. He's off to the Warriors, isn't he, Niokoro?
Yes.
Yeah, thought so.
Okay. Saturday night's nightcap saw Canberra 24 defeat the Titans 22. Yep, you've heard that right. Canberra didn't choke for a change.
Shock, horror, crazy.
One thing we didn't get to in the Melbourne game was the Nelson Asafa Solomona incident. I will save that for when we review Graham Annesley's debrief because there's a lot to come out of that specific incident.
And there's another thing in this game we'll save for that as well.
Yeah. Tackle counter. But
and this time it wasn't even Ben Cummins' fault, Canberra fans.
It actually benefited Canberra. It's a revenge.
It's a make-up for the six again in a irrelevant round three game. So
Canberra fans always wanted to square up. This is where it comes from.
Exactly.
Regardless of experience, how you let a 22-0 lead slip when you've had all the momentum, all of the football, just evaporate in the space of 40 minutes, completely amuses me.
AJ, you're selling it short. They've now let a 22-0 lead slip in back-to-back seasons.
Oh, that's right. They did it last year against you, Blakes, didn't they? Broncos. They did it against you, Blakes, hey?
So, have they improved?
Here's my answer to that. The fact that they didn't blow it all at once shows signs that there is a little bit improvement. The obvious answer is all of it inexperience. That's exactly right. And you've got, obviously, last year they had AJ Brimson at fullback. This year they've got Jaden Campbell. Brimson and Sexton are in the halves. So you can kind of get that little bit of leniency, but you can't blow a 22-0 lead.
Yeah.
Go on.
You know, you can turn around and say, oh, it's just the inexperience in the spine, but it's on the forwards, who are more experienced, as much as it is on those inexperienced guys in the number six and number one jerseys.
So let's just take a look at some of the key stats. The possession, after being so lopsided in the first half, flopped back to Canberra overall. Key forwards, David Fifita, hang on a moment. They say Fifita ran for the most meters. I don't believe that.
To be fair, he was getting a lot of ball in one-on-one situations.
Yeah, he did have 15 carries for 173 metres. Tino had 16 carries. Liu had 15 carries. Fotoaika had 15 carries. Firma had 8 carries. Jolliffe, 7 carries. So a few people there definitely need to lift. I think Bo Firma's definitely a potential star of the future. He was brilliant.
I'm worried Firma is playing too similar to...
As that fast-paced, reliable...
Yeah, exactly. Both of the guys who are going... Like, they're try-scoring threats rather than out-and-out hit-up magnet back rows.
Yeah.
So, if you're going to be playing a guy like Fifita on one edge, you have to have a guy who's willing to play in the middle on the other one.
Yeah. At risk of getting abused by Subbo Dan on Twitter, Jack Wyden, I thought, was the best player on the park.
He was. He's back. Not scared to say it. He's back.
You want to know the play that summed it up?
Go ahead.
Right after halftime, he puts a kick early in the tackle count, leads the chase, tackles Jaden Campbell in goal.
Yeah.
That sets up their entire comeback.
Yeah. His effort play this week, it's something we didn't see much last year. We didn't see Jack Wyden hustling to try and win back the ball. We didn't see Jack Wyden trying to set stuff up on his own back. Last year, he sort of seemed to be trying to let the game come to him.
Yep.
This year, he's back to what he did 2019-2020, which is going out and attacking the game, taking it by the scruff of the neck, which makes the Raiders a much more dangerous side.
If I could award a supplementary lolcow of the week, Corey Horsburgh. For captains challenging his own high tackle.
I'm going to give that a tiny moo.
How can you do that, mate?
I'm not sure if he did that just to slow the game down.
He was confident he didn't make a high tackle too.
Okay, what's worse? That one or a winger making a challenge for tackling the player midair? What would be worse?
I reckon. Because at least when tackling in the air, you can make a kind of semi-excuse that you're going for the ball. True. When you're doing a swinging arm like that, like Corey Horsburgh did, and try and pass it off that you didn't do it.
Wasn't me.
You're like one of those bloody murderers on Criminal Minds that goes through the whole episode. I didn't do it. Then he gets caught at the end.
Actually, here's a question. This is a good question, and you might be able to answer it, you might not. If they do that challenge, all right?
Yeah.
So they challenge that Horsburgh didn't tackle him high.
It'll be deemed successful, and they'll replay the tackle there because the tackle would have been
complete. No. That's not what I'm asking here.
Okay.
They go through and they turn around and say, okay, Horsburgh did not make high contact,
mm-hmm.
but it's still a penalty because he was, say, offside. do Canberra still retain the challenge?
Yes, because the penalty's changed. The penalty type has changed.
Imagine that, though. Just a whole bunch of nothing.
But offside, but you can't technically challenge captain's challenge offsides.
Yeah, I know, but the bunker would be able to overturn it if a player was offside.
Fair point. That's actually a good one. Okay, Sunday footy saw a Queensland derby that was really one-sided. North Queensland 38, defeating Brisbane 12. A lot of people saying that this was one that had to happen for the Broncos. Reese, you're one of them?
Yep, I was one of them.
Take me through it.
Yep. Obviously, it sucks to lose to the Cowboys. I'm not going to mince my words there. It absolutely sucks losing to the Cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the fact that we lost to the Cowboys is possibly the best thing that could have happened to the Broncos. In that, that's the one game that the players and coaching staff wants to win more than anything.
Just like, you know, a derby for the Roosters and Rabbits.
Forget the Rabbitohs game. Forget the Bulldogs game. Forget the Warriors game this week, the Roosters game next week. This is the game we wanted to win. And instead, we fell flat on our faces, which I saw coming a mile away. Obviously, I sat there talking up, you know, the Reynolds-Kelly combination in the Bulldogs game. But even I could see when we were on the attack, we deferred way too much to Albert Kelly. Don't get me wrong, Kelly is a good player, but he works best as a second receiver.
Uh-huh.
So Adam Reynolds needs to be getting more involved in the attack, which really he hasn't had to do at any point in his career. He's always had Luke Keary or Cody Walker, who were able to play first receiver in attack and let Reynolds sit back, direct the play, put a kick up.
Yep.
So he has to be more involved. The second thing is the forward pack. They were all right.
But not solid.
But not they weren't good. They have to take that step up. We can't just be relying on Payne Haas, as good as he is.
Did you see the reports today?
No, I didn't. Oh, but yes, I did. He signed a new agent. He has finalized a new agent deal. So.
And he wants out?
No. I'm not. He doesn't want out. He wants a new contract. Players don't want out with 3 years left on their contract.
The Roosters are circling.
The Roosters are circling every player that's ever been born. I'm sure if Arthur Beetson was still alive, they'd be asking him about a comeback.
Considering the Roosters' defensive inefficiencies, we'll just bring back Bunny Riley as well.
Ah, yep, throw him as well.
Yeah, I have to throw in the reference there as well.
Yeah,
but let's go for the Cowboys. I feel bad putting them in last place now. They looked very good.
I will say, I said this last week. I'll say it this week. I can already see the articles coming in 5 years about how did the Broncos let Thomas Dearden walk away from the club.
They write themselves.
They do, but at the end of the day, it was the best decision Dearden could make.
He's become a better player because of it.
Yeah, he lost all confidence in the Broncos. It's unfortunate, but he got thrown into the deep end in a team that was not good.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, his performance suffered. His potential was suffering. He had no other option but to leave the club. And I'm not mad at that decision.
He probably made the best decision for himself, for everyone, in my view.
Yeah, exactly. And I think if he stays at the Broncos, he's still getting beaten out by Albert Kelly for the 5'8 jersey.
Question for you.
Mm-hmm.
With the performance of Albert Kelly with Adam Reynolds, do you contemplate Billy at 6?
Not yet.
Or are you scared, this is my supplementary question, that if you do, it opens up that revolving door you had last year?
That's an issue, obviously. I think at the end of the day, realistically, no matter who we play at 6, it's just the placeholder until Ezra Mamm is ready to play first grade.
You reckon?
He is the Broncos 5'8 of the future, 100%.
Okay.
Especially the way he's opened the season in the Queensland Cup.
Do you have stats or anything off by hand?
I can pull it up for you quickly.
Yeah, just so we give our listeners some kind of context.
Yeah, but in case you don't know who Ezra Mamm is, all right, 18 years of age, come through the Broncos youth system, and he is genuinely, right now, we're talking about probably one of the five best halfbacks under 20 in the NRL.
Of course, Sam Walker's at the top.
Oh, 100%. Of course, I can't find it now. Hang on a sec. Ezra Mam. All right, so this is his quote. So Sporting News put out five best players in the New South Wales and Queensland Cup.
Yep.
This is what they said this week for Ezra Mam.
Okay.
Although unable to help get South Lurgan over the line against the Brisbane Tigers, a match that ended in a thrilling 22-all draw, Ezra Mam continues to light up the QRL with his speed and skill. The 19-year-old playmaking sensation was a standout for the Magpies, making 10 runs for 117 metres to cause the Tigers all kinds of headaches and evasiveness across the ground. Mm-hmm. Mam was also good with the boot, converting 3 from 4 from the tee and kicking for 134 metres in general play, including a forced dropdown. Mam is still in the midst of his development and is set to continue playing his trade in reserve grade. But should injuries or form arise at the Broncos in weeks to come, the gun rookie will be up to the task should Kevin Walters decide to call on him.
Good raps. And I think, who's out? Sorry, Jordan Rickey won't play this week. He's on the injured list. Also on
Well, Ricky's been named. It's Capewell who's unlikely to play. He's been named in the reserves for this week.
They just got rib injury here on my NRL wrap-up page. Also in doubt is Cohen Hess. He's out with a shoulder injury for North Queensland against the Roosters. We're getting something go our way.
Brisbane do get, and this is good news for them, they do get Tom Flegel back.
He'll be good for your forwards.
Pardon?
He'll be good for your forwards. And we'll go through the team list at the end of the program.
Yep.
Okay, Sunday night football. We finally have a decent stadium in Manly at Brookvale Oval. Manly 13 defeat Canterbury Bankstown 12. First things first, that new grandstand looks frigging amazing.
Yep, and obviously the Bob Fulton stand honouring arguably Manly's greatest ever player. It's really good. It brings Brookvale in line with the modern stadium around the NRL. And I love the quote, you know, Manly spent way less time on Brookvale than Cronulla did with points bet, yet Brookvale is the one that got the bigger upgrade.
Let me guess, that was from our Lord and Saviour, Hux?
No, it wasn't actually. I don't remember who it was from, but it wasn't from Hux this time.
Good, I was going to say, Hux is doing good providing us some content.
I swear, we can just do a whole podcast of Adam Hux's tweet over the weekend.
Dirty about is his old Twitter account got deleted and had the rankings of all the scoreboards in history.
Yeah, we have to get him to do that again. But you remember why it got deleted, right?
No.
He baited Mark Riddell.
Oh, that's right. I remember that now. So Canterbury once again showing that they're going to compete this year. There's no doubt that Canterbury are going to compete. But they are now going to be missing Jack Everington for the remainder of the season after sustaining a bony Bankart fracture of the glenoid. So in simple terms, as Gus put it on Twitter, basically, his shoulder popped out and back in again. It will require surgery and he will miss the remainder of the season.
Look, I know I did bag Hetherington last week. I said, what does he actually provide the Bulldogs?
Yep.
But it is a pretty considerable loss for a team that already didn't have too much in terms of forward depth.
Yep.
So, yeah, it does suck for the Bulldogs. I feel sorry, obviously, for Jack Hetherington.
My God.
What has AJ seen?
You are going to love the Dally M judges again. Jerry Marshall King snuck another vote.
No, nope. I'm ending the podcast. Good night, guys. No. Oh, my God. Where's... Okay, who's... You know what? Is he you know what-ing?
Well, this week's judge was Scott Sattler, so we can't blame Chris Langton. And as a Roosters fan, I wish he never existed. For obvious reasons. She passing it free.
How the hell have two different voters decided Jeremy Marshall King was the third best player on the field in back-to-back weeks?
Yeah, this week's judges, Roy Masters, who hasn't been involved in a coaching capacity or playing or officiating capacity since 1987. Is somehow still alive.
That's a bit harsh.
Well, have you seen his columns that he writes in the Sydney Morning Herald?
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying it's been harsh. But knowing Roe Masters, the Bulldogs are going to lose, you know, by a bunch to Melbourne, and Marshall King's going to get three votes.
Luke Lewis, judged Andrew Johns, Brett Camorley, David Shillington, Greg Alexander, Gary Belcher, and Scott Sattler.
I love how there's like some really, really good names in there of voters. Yep. And then there's David Shillington.
I mean, I'm happy with Badger's selections. We agreed about the same three best players on the park.
See, that's always nice.
Brandy went Tom Starling when I went Matt Tomoko.
That's fair. I think Starling was pretty good.
Okay. So that's the recap of round three. Judiciary news we didn't get to. Malaki Fonawaker was charged with a grade one dangerous contact. How do you want to do this? Do you want to do teams for this week in a briefing or briefing in a team list?
Teams in the briefing makes the most sense, I reckon.
Okay, so we're going to go through the team list for round four quickly. We're going to start on Thursday night, Gold Coast up against the Tigers. Jaden Campbell is out, so Jermaine Asako will make his club debut. Corey Thompson returns on the wing at the expense of Philip Sami, who's contracted COVID. So otherwise, the same side for the Gold Coast Faders against the Tigers. The Tigers, what we touched on before, no Stafford Toll or Jake Simpkin. James Roberts, Ken Mamalo, and Kima Tulangi return. Luke Garner and Alex Saifah push back to the bench. Zane Musgrove starts at prop with Stefano Utukamanu out injured. Sharks v Knights, Silisi Fatalikai moves at the centres with Connor Tracy out injured. He's an underrated player, isn't he?
He did. He's had a really good start to the season, Connor Tracy. And for a guy who I think most people had as like their 5'8 for this season, you know, he's been pushed to the centres and he's done a really good job.
And even Talakai is a good consistent forward.
Yeah, exactly. He's
pushed out in the centre. Teague Wilden returns at back row after being suspended for the shot on Mitch Moses. Hux's mate, Matty Kavalu, is also out with an ankle injury, with Renato Mulitalo returning on the wing. Hux is probably crying about that, I reckon.
Well, no, he's too busy crying about Adam Kieran not being in the Rooster side.
He's not the AK-47. He's not playing.
No, but that's Hux's agenda for this week. Hang on a second. I'll pull it up. I'm pretty sure he did a whole stat line on...
I saw the tweets where he went AK Manu, Momorovsky, Smith 18, Tupanua 19.
Yep, that's what he did.
Newcastle. Ponga is named again after withdrawing 24 hours from game day for two straight weeks. Brody Jones comes in for our grub of the week, expected to be serving a lengthy suspension at the judiciary tonight. Suaso Su returns on the bench after missing the first few weeks, with Matt Croker making way. Penrith, Nathan Cleary's back. Sean O'Sullivan doesn't even make the 24 this week. Chris Smith joins him after failing concussion protocol after Mitch Barnett's high shot. There you go, judiciary. There's your proof.
Okay, knowing that, they're going to go the James Graham route, where he got banned for 7 games for Reynolds' injury when Reynolds only missed 2 games with the injury.
Scott Sorensen starts a back row with Lindsay Smith on the bench. South Sydney, they're as per program after their win over the Roosters. The only possible change I could see is Blake Taff potentially playing a utility spot.
Yeah, that's... I'm surprised they didn't do that last week, to be honest. I feel as though he'd be great in the number 17 jersey, just being that utility who can come in and inject himself into the game, either playing hooker for a little bit with Damien Cook, going into that ball-playing lock role, or maybe even coming in for a center.
Here's one for you. Do you think the changes to the six again will probably take away that ability of the 14 that we saw come on and provide a bit of spark last year?
In a way, but 14s have always been able to provide spark as long as they're used correctly.
Yeah, okay. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, fair enough.
Warriors v Broncos. One change to the Warriors 17. Bailey Sirenin's out. Jack Murchie returns to the bench. The new face on the reserves list is Sean Johnson, who's a chance of an early return from injury. The Broncos. Kurt Capel is relegated to reserves and unlikely to play, as Reese mentioned earlier. Tom Flegler is back. He's listed on the bench while Ryan James will start at prop. TC Rapati, who missed last week's game, is listed on the bench at the expense of Corey Jensen. And also on the Broncos, Brendan Piakura has suffered a grade 2 hamstring tear and will miss the next 6 weeks. I know he's a popular super coach, Cheapy.
Yep, he's in my side. So I've already made my two trades for the week, so I'm going to have to just keep him as a non-playing reserve this week.
And same. Manly versus Canberra. The Mighty Troop has a settled team list with the same 17 named for Saturday. Oshay Ole returned from the suspension and is listed in the reserves. PVL, you've given us some memes, but I think that's the best one.
Oh, 100%.
Oshay Ole. Canberra. Seb Chris is out of the squad altogether with Nick Kotrick named on the wing after being withdrawn last week. And we have an officiating debut this week. Ben Teague is debuting on the sideline. So congratulations, Ben.
Yep, good on him. Always great to see referees make the grade.
Yep, been a long-standing touchy in the New South Wales High Performance Squad, finally getting acknowledged with his first NRL game this year. So congratulations to him. Cowboys up against the Roosters. Cowboys are unchanged, which is a surprise because I thought Cohen Hess had a severe shoulder injury. But he'll be touch and go with that in mind. Jermaine Tanua-Brown is on standby. For the Roosters, Fletcher Baker is out with Daniel Saluka-Fifita replacing him on the bench. Otherwise, a settled lineup. And also, Trent Robertson is out, testing positive to COVID-19. Jason Riles will be the acting coach this week. So, a bit of a blow there.
That's, what, three acting coaches so far this season already?
Three. Fitzy went.
Oh, there hasn't been a second one. Okay.
Unless you're counting Henne and Price's two.
No. Okay, I thought there was one last week. I must have been all over the place. All right, all good.
I just wanted to make sure, all good. Storm v Canterbury. Nick Meaney and Chris Lewis dropped to the reserves to accommodate the return of Xavier Coates and Harry Grant. Brandon Smith drops back to the bench for Harry Grant starting at hooker. For me, that's a massive vote of confidence in Josh King at 13.
That is.
Well, I had him as my player to watch last week. He played really well.
Actually.
Just lagged out there big time.
Be back. Or it could be the fact
you just lagged out there. Back there like all good.
Oh. Did you hear what I said? I said it might be because Tyron Wishart won't be able to return to trading until Friday, which is the day before the game.
Yeah, he's listed on the reserves, but will probably be cut off.
Yeah.
Canterbury, Jack Everington, as mentioned, out for the season. Corey Waddell starts at back row with Luke Thompson moving the prop. Arvo Siemanifanai joins the bench. So you'll probably see a switcheroo with Luke Thompson and Arvo Siemanifanai. And you're pleased to note, Reese, Adam G's not refereeing your match this week.
Thank for that.
You've got Chris Sutton, who we'll get to in a minute.
Ah, okay.
Parramatta,
not G.
You've got some vendetta against the bloke.
Look,
G and Goff are the only two referees.
Nanara's retired. Those are the only two referees. When I see them on the team list for the Broncos game, I'm like, oh, God, this is going to be tough. So
that's me and Ashley Klein.
Yeah, I'll take Chris Sutton, mate. I will take Chris Sutton any day of the week. Just don't let me down, boy.
It's interesting they didn't. They actually dropped Peter Goff this week.
I think it was because of the Chris Smith incident where he didn't call time off and let the play go on through around him.
Yeah. I think so too. But anyway, Ryan Madison returns, replacing Ray Stone on the bench, while Bryce Cartwright is named ahead of Wimmera Gregg. St. George, meanwhile, Cody Rims is out with a hamstring injury. Matt Feagai is named on the wing in his place. Jaden Sewer is suspended, so Jack Drzewski starts for him. Aaron Wood with George Burgess named in the reserves. So that recaps the team list.
I won't be going into that with the Dragons, with Burgess.
I will just read out the statement the NRL issued yesterday because I think that's pretty important, what was said. So let me just get this statement up. All right, here it is. So the National Rugby League has advised St. George Illawarra Dragons that George Burgess will be permitted to continue playing in the NRL Premiership while subject to criminal proceedings. So as not to prejudice Burgess's criminal proceedings case, the NRL will wait until the outcome of that case before taking any action for potential breaches of NRL rules. The decision in no way forms a judgment on the allegations against Burgess, which are serious, and the NRL reserves the right to impose the no-fault stand-down in the future.
I understand that, but at the end of the day, that whole, what is it, 7 or 11 years?
What is it? I think it's 11 years.
Yeah, that whole 11, it's such an arbitrary number. You know?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, like the NRL said, these are serious allegations. This carries a 5-year penalty.
Yeah. No. So what do you think when he goes to trial, they'll enact that stand down policy?
No, because if they're not doing it now, I don't see them doing it unless he's found guilty. I 100%. Really don't.
It's an interesting one, that's for sure. Okay, so Graeme Annesley's briefing, we have a few little things to talk about. We're going to start off with the Panthers Knights game. Kurt Mann's HIA. He says that there was contact with the head and the hip as well as his other head. And you know what? The stumble, according to the independent doctor, couldn't be determined. Fuss was the reason behind the review.
I mean,
look, do you buy that?
Look, I don't know how many women listen to this podcast, okay?
God.
But I'm going to explain from a man's perspective, okay?
I'm going to check our demographics so I don't...
Yeah, when they go down because they have been hit in the...
Jack's Crackers?
In the Jack's Crackers, we'll say. Usually their hand immediately goes into that direction.
Yep.
So if he's stumbling and his hand is protecting the crown jewels like we saw on Saturday, I don't think it's a head injury.
I think so too. Graeme Annesley further went on to say it is a new system. Graeme, it's been 3 weeks.
We said that after the round one podcast.
We've been saying this for 3 weeks.
You know, he's only just trying to use that as an excuse now. No, we gave you the benefit of the doubt in round one with the Victor Radley case because it was a new system.
We gave him the benefit of the doubt after round two with Sean O'Sullivan.
We're not giving him the benefit of the doubt now in round three after the complete embarrassment that was Kurt Mann having to take a head injury assessment because he got hit on the goddamn penis.
He also debunked a common theory that we all have about putting the doctor at the ground. Here's why. He says, in the clinical aspect of the bunker is the best place for them to be. That was what came out of his mouth on Monday.
I'm not even going to comment on that.
It gets better. The Nelson Asofa Solomona incident, match review committee graded this a grade one, as we know.
No penalty given at the game.
According to Graeme Annesley, the referee should have sin-binned this incident, which is an error from Ashley Klein. So guess what they do with Ashley Klein? They give him the grand final rematch on Friday night.
Oh, yeah. So much for wanting to make the game safer.
Annesley said the match review committee is now an independent organisation, is now independent away from everyone. They've got a new panel this year chaired by Luke Patton. I believe Michael Hodgson, another player, Stuart Raper, and Steve Clark. So it's a fairly experienced group.
Yeah.
They said it is a high tackle, the contact to the back of the head. The force was low to moderate, hence a grade one. It was a careless action, and the risk injury was low. The mitigating factor was Makatoa slipping. The NRL have since come out and said their confidence in the match review committee, but they reckon the force was higher and should have been a grade two charge.
Yeah, well, look, I'm not going to sit here and bag on the MRC just yet. Let's see what they do tonight with the Barnett case. I'm sure if I disagree with their decision, you're going to hear about it on Twitter.
We'll hear about it on Twitter, and I'm sure we'll hear about it next week.
Yeah. But anyway, how much more have we got to do on this? Because I still got to give my lolcow for the week.
We've got two incidences. We're going to go. We already covered off the Tigers Warriors no try, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. We looked at it briefly. I'll just say 100% it should have been referred to the bunker on field. I don't understand why, in that situation where it is close, like it's not a clear cut knock on, it's not clear cut ball has gone dead. It's a close decision. I don't understand why it's not being referred to the bunker.
Annesley won't concede it as a mistake because he cannot be certain what decision the bunker would have made, which is fair.
That's fair, but at the same time, you have to turn around and say the referee has to send those to the bunker.
Okay, Raiders v. Titans, there was a tackle count error. Now, we don't see these often. I don't think we've had one for a while. It was an important part of the game as the Raiders went on to score the next set. I cannot get for the life of me how we have tackle count errors anymore. I thought we were smarter.
Seriously, it's not even being smarter. All you have to do is count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah, and it's on everyone in the officiating crew. It goes from the referee, the touch judges. They've got a match day coach.
They've got the bunker.
Yeah,
you're telling me the bunker can't get into the referees here. Hey, mate, why'd you call fourth tackle? It's only third. You know?
Just count it on your fingers.
They have all these camera angles and no calculators, apparently.
Like, I don't understand where the error came from, too. Like, I watched the whole set back today. He must have miscounted one. It had to have been a miscount.
Either that or there was an offload which he
thought was a tackle.
Which he thought was a tackle, let play on, and then went back to it still thinking there had been a tackle already made.
Yeah, I'm just trying to see, because I know that Chris Sutton's got a game in the middle. One touch judge. Yeah, both all the officiating crew were retained this week.
Which is weird because traditionally, when there's been a tackle error, a tackle count error, the referee has been dropped.
Yeah, 100% Reese, lull count of the week time.
Okay, so I'm going in a different direction now. I'm going to let AJ, because a lot of the time, our lull cows at an NRL level are going to be the same.
Do I get to be the deciding vote?
So no, I'm going to let AJ stick with the NRL lull cow. And I'm going to go ahead and go with a more international lolcow approach for this week. You know, sometimes I'm going a bit more international. We'll just make it a bit more fun.
What incident could I be thinking of?
This week, I don't know if you've heard this one, AJ, but I think you're going to love it. This week, we're going to the City of Brotherly Love in Philadelphia. So there was an NHL match, including the Philadelphia Flyers. And with the way the NHL works, in case you never watched a hockey game, they play in periods. So there's three different periods, each 20 minutes, three periods. At the end of each period, there's a break.
Mm-hmm.
So like they do in the footy, for the break, they let kids out onto the ice to play some hockey. You know, it's just nice and fun, gives the kids a really nice experience, gives the family something to watch when they're not waiting in ridiculous lines at the bars for drinks. So anyway, there was one kid who went out, and the mascot for the Philadelphia Flyers, his name is Gritty. And he's just, the best way to describe him would be a big orange blob. Okay? So there was one kid who went out in the end of the first period, skating around for a little bit, playing a bit of hockey. And then he decides to get into a fight with Gritty.
No.
So he gets into a fight with the mascot.
No. And
he gets put in the penalty. So the way the hockey works in the NHL, it's a 5-minute penalty for fighting. You get to sit in the penalty box.
It's like a
That's where he went. He went into the penalty box until the end of the period. Everyone cleared out. The teams came back on, played another period of hockey, went into the tunnel again. Those same kids were then brought back out on the ice to resume the game.
Yeah.
And the kid resumed his fight with the mascot. Whereas everyone else is running around playing hockey, this kid woke up and said, all I want to do is fight Gritty.
Very, very smart.
I respect him for that. I really do.
Okay. Away from other sports now, we've got to acknowledge something very, very important. Buddy Franklin. You wouldn't hear me talking about AFL on a footy podcast, but we have to do it. He kicked 1,000 goals. The scene at the SCG was absolutely amazing.
You won't see that anywhere else in any sport.
The only time I think we'll see is when Auburn beat Alabama once every 5 years.
Yeah, true.
But like, I love that about. I just love how the security was just like, yeah, nah, we're just gonna let them go.
it was just a few people that would have chased them down, but it was at least 600, 700 people, minimum, flooding onto the field at the same time.
Oh,
if you're a security guard seeing that, you're not going to get in front of it.
Yeah, you were screwed.
Yeah. And while we're on the topic of Australians in other sports, Tim Zhu.
Oh, that's right. He had his US debut, didn't he?
Yep, and it was another win for him. He has to be getting close to having a chance at the championship.
He has to be very, very close, and he's achieving things that absolutely amazing rates, and good on him too.
Yeah, he's, you know, it's with Ash Barty retiring, Australia.
What a shock that was.
Yeah, that was a massive shock. Although I understand that women's tennis does take a lot toll physically and mentally.
Yeah. But
for a player of that caliber to retire at 25, it's crazy.
It is.
But yeah, but now with Ash Barty retiring, Australia need that big international, you know,
superstar
athlete.
100%.
I think Tim Zhu definitely has the potential to be that, to fill that role.
100%. Well, that's just about wrap us up here on the league scene. Next time we'll be here, we'll be discussing the Mitch Barnett judiciary case, which is being heard right now under a new panel of Bob Linder, Tony Pulitzer, and Jeff Bellew. I'm AJ Luke Antonio. Thanks very much for joining us. Massive thanks to Ray Sullivan, as always.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks very much for your company. We'll see you next time.